This is Radio EcoShock with your host, Alex Smith.
The old saying about the circus, there's a sucker born every minute. But hundreds of new humans are born every minute as the human population continues to multiply. Many will be Western-style super consumers, the ones who drain resources from all over the world and fill the skies with greenhouse gases. If we can't control that urge, a major climate catastrophe may do it for us. Alicia Graves has one of the answers we need. She calls it green sex, do it for the climate. We'll find out what that means. Alicia has a master's in public health from the University of California. She's co-founded and leads a group called the OASIS Initiative, which stands for Organizing to Advance Solutions in the Sahel. The Sahel is that band of desert countries in North Africa where population is exploding in the face of poverty. But as we'll learn, they are not the big climate problem. Alicia Graves is also a research fellow for Project Drawdown, a group of scientists and other experts working to create a livable climate future. Alicia, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thank you very much.
Now, you do realize that a lot of people don't even want to hear about this subject at all. Is it because right-wing men, especially in the United States, have poisoned it with religious objections and paranoia? What is the problem? Why are people shying away from talking about population?
That's a very good question. I think what happened is that in the 60s and 70s, as some of the listeners will know, there was a lot of talk about a population explosion. There was a book by Paul Ehrlich that got a lot of attention to the issue. And I guess because his projections didn't pan out as quickly as he expected, people have dismissed it. Of course, there have been coercive population programs in many parts of the world, which have led people to be a bit repulsed by the idea. And actually, in my writing and when I get a chance to speak to people like today, I want to reinforce the fact that it's not so much about population control. It's just meeting women's basic needs to separate sex from childbearing.
Okay, now to hear some environmental groups tell it, all we have to do is install solar energy and drive electric cars. Problem solved. Alicia, can we really tackle the climate issue without talking about population?
No, I don't think we can. I think we have to recognize that each one of us has a direct and multiplying effect on all sorts of environmental issues, resource usage for sure, but also emissions and climate. We have to recognize that that's part of the picture. And in doing so, we should also recognize that it doesn't mean telling women what to do. It's about giving us what we want.
And our other instant mental defense, it seems to me, is to tell ourselves it's those billions of peasants over there somewhere who are responsible for population impact. What's wrong with that idea?
Well, like you said in your opening, it's a silly idea because people in the poorest parts of the world, yes, 99% of population growth in this century is happening in less developed countries. So that is a major demographic story. But these are not the people who will be high emitters. We know that U.S. has some of the world's highest emission rates. And it's also true that almost one in two pregnancies in our country in the U.S. are unintended. By unintended pregnancy, I mean a woman who said they did not intend or mean to get pregnant at that time, or some of them ever again, but they do have a pregnancy. So there's an enormous opportunity to meet women's basic needs for reproductive health services.
You know, when I read that in your article, it kind of blew my mind. I thought, well, look, we're in the age of the birth control pill and all sorts of ways, condoms, whatever. How is it possible that still almost half the babies in the United States are unplanned?
Yeah, it is very surprising. I think something to take into account is that most women in the U.S. want to have, on average, 2 children. So to achieve that, she will spend, let's just take an average woman, will spend about 5 years either trying to get pregnant or lactating, in which case she's not really eligible to get pregnant. And then she'll spend another 30 years trying to avoid getting pregnant. And so it's a very long time to use consistently and correctly without fail contraception. And there are technological, you know, malfunctions, there's human error. And so that also needs to be backed up with access to safe abortion, timely and safe abortion, which in light of the current political climate, we have to look very carefully at the views of our potential next president are. I'm scared about the idea of Ted Cruz, for example, because he wants to deny women rights to these basic reproductive health services.
Yep, pretty scary step backwards if that happens. Now, I wish you would take just a little time to explain this formula called IPAT, how it works and why it matters. Tell us about that, please, Alicia.
Thanks, Alex. Yes, I will. I equals P times A times T is a very important equation and pretty straightforward. It was published by Paul Ehrlich and John Holdren, who's the science advisor to the current president. It stands for impact on the environment equals population times affluence times technology. And I think affluence is, in this case, it's our ability to consume. So if we think about it in terms of climate, for example, we know that consumption, especially use of electricity, has a multiplying effect. And T is technology. Now, I've seen another version of this where T, the technology, can actually reduce our impact on the environment. And we're seeing this more and more with climate solutions.
Now, conservatives who we talked about, who are sometimes against women's control over reproduction, also claim to be concerned about spending, about fiscal responsibility. What are the high-cost ways to reduce greenhouse gases versus a low-cost approach?
I can't go too much into the details because I'm focused on two approaches. Let me tell you about these. Family planning is a very low-cost approach. The Guttmacher Institute estimates it's about $6 to $10 per user of family planning per year. So it's a very low-cost approach by allowing women to achieve her family size or avoiding an unintended pregnancy. Another low-cost, very, very high payoff approach is by educating girls. And education, I hope you'll agree, is a basic human right. It's also essential for development. And yet secondary school education, especially for adolescent girls in poor parts of the world, the rates are abysmal. And so this is something that has, in addition to upholding basic rights, allowing women to have more control over her future, it also has a climate payoff. Because by keeping girls in school, it helps delay their marriage and delay their childbearing. It makes it more likely that they'll use family planning in the future and be able to negotiate that with their partner. I mean, it even has, there's even evidence to show that women who go to secondary school tend to have better farming outcomes, better crop yields, et cetera. So that's another example. But one other thing I would say in response to your question is, for any listeners who are interested in these different climate solutions, visit the Project Drawdown site. The solutions are more surprising and more diverse than we think, and they're looking at the top 100 solutions that can be scaled up in the coming decades to draw down the greenhouse gases in the atmosphere, not just stabilize them just under the 2 degrees Celsius dangerous cutoff that's been identified.
So if I understand your writing, we make a fundamental change in greenhouse gases by reexamining our attitude towards sex. So what do you mean when you say green sex?
Yeah, I thought that was a pretty a clever name for it. But as I said at the beginning, I really just mean allowing women to separate sex from childbearing. And for many of us, we take this for granted. But in parts of the world and in communities in developed countries like the U.S., there are plenty of women who aren't able to do this for various barriers, some of them political and some of them more personal. So I just mean allowing each woman to choose her family size and not let it be something that happens to her.
Well, men are definitely involved because I think in many parts of the world and in the United States, there are men who have been brought up to believe or do believe that the more kids they have, the more manly they are.
Yes, Alex, that is true. And there's the old expression, it takes two to tango. In parts of the world, there's definitely a lot of respect that's garnered on people who have large families. That's something that needs to be recognized. But there are also plenty of men who say that they, you know, either had desire to wait longer before they had a kid or to stop having them altogether, and yet they find themselves with a partner who's pregnant. So I think we should focus on those people who have a need today and make sure that all of those needs are met. Around the world, there are about 220 million women who say they want to stop or space their next pregnancy, but aren't using family planning. And so there's a huge opportunity there to reach those women and have tremendous benefits for her personally and her taking control of her life, also her health, her family's health, and of course, like we started with, the climate.
So, Alicia, to be clear, are you telling men and women to stop having children because the climate future is so terrible?
No, I'm not. I have two children myself, and I understand their immense value. And I think actually that they will be the ones to really bring the creativity and the imagination to help solve the climate crisis. I'm telling men and women to recognize that there is a need for family planning. It needs to be put back onto the agenda. We don't have to be afraid to talk about the relationship between population and the environment. We need to look at countries that have had successful voluntary family plannings where family size has fallen very rapidly. And they're around the world. It's Iran, Thailand, Rwanda, for example. These are countries, when it's prioritized, families tend to choose to have fewer children. Couples choose to have smaller families. And so this needs to be on the international agenda.
You know, I think Iran is such a stimulating example because there we have a Muslim country and people have this prototype, preconception that a Muslim country, they won't have family planning. So what do you know what happened in Iran that made it work there?
I know a little bit about it. They realized that population was growing very fast and that it was detrimental to the country's development. And they chose to invest time and money, of course, in making sure that each couple could reach their desired family size. One of the things that they did was put in place mandatory couples counseling before marriage. And I think in the counseling, they talked about many things, but of course, they talked about reproduction, how babies are made, and how to prevent pregnancies in the case that the couple chose to. So if this is something systematic, again, voluntary, backed up with good access to health services, it's not enough to know about how to prevent pregnancy. You need to have the technology, the contraceptives, either modern or there are traditional methods as well in order to do that. Some people focus so much on getting the information out about avoiding pregnancy, but are afraid to then back that up with good access to contraceptives. You need both, of course.
You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
I'm Alex Smith. Get it all at our website, ecoshock.org. This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith, talking with American public health expert Alicia Graves about green sex. Alicia, what is the situation in the Sahel where your organization Oasis Initiative works?
Yes, Oasis, as you mentioned, is a project of the University of California, Berkeley. I started it with my colleague Malcolm Potts a few years ago. We are focused on the Sahel region. It's an ecological zone just south of the Sahara Desert. It's a transition zone that stretches across the widest part of Africa. And it really is going to be, it already is, ground zero for climate effects, man-made climate effects on human health. The region has suffered severe droughts and famines since the 70s into the 80s. Even today, at the heart of the region, in a country called Niger, nearly half of children are stunted. They're not growing to their physical or cognitive potential because of malnutrition. We're bringing a multidisciplinary approach to looking at what can we do, what will work, especially for girls and women in this region in order to reach a place of true development. And we have partners in the region, other universities. were focused on really practical approaches to girls and women's empowerment, especially how to keep girls in secondary school or at least give them some basic life skills. And we're also looking at how to reach women with family planning, which is kind of the last frontier in the field of family planning. It has some of, Niger has the world's highest fertility rates, very large desired family sizes. And yet there are about 1.5 times as many women who want access to contraceptives but aren't using them as there are women who are using them. So even in this very difficult place to work, there are tremendous opportunities to help women meet basic needs for family planning and for taking control of their lives.
And are people there beginning to get cars and motor scooters and things that will emit more greenhouse gases, or are they merely set up in the place where our greenhouse gases are going to have the most impact?
That's a good question. I think most of the least developed countries are really not on a path towards great economic development. Part of the story is because their populations are growing so rapidly that the GDP, the per capita economic growth, is not able to keep up with the population. I think you make a good point. A lot of the lesser developed countries are on a path towards development, and they will be emitting more greenhouse gases in the future. But I think really the story for the least developed countries, unfortunately, is that unless some urgent investment and action is taken in the very near future, they'll be more victims of climate change than they will be contributing to it via, you know, all of these lovely luxuries that most of your listeners are privy to, like motorbikes and cars, electricity at the home, etc. Bill and Melinda Gates, in their most recent annual letter, actually, Bill talks about what a common good energy is, and he makes a very good case for investing in green energy and really approaching it in a much more creative, much more scalable way. Because it's not something, of course, we don't want to deny this to anybody. It's key to our development.
Of course, if drought continues to hit that part of Africa, followed by floods, as it so often is, we may see more climate refugees. We're already seeing a lot of North Africans are headed to Europe as economic refugees, you can call them, but I would call some of them climate refugees. That'll change the picture because then they'll want to live like Europeans.
Yes, the refugees from Syria last summer, which of course is still continuing, but it was in the news a lot last summer, it got a lot of attention. And what people need to know is that this is just sort of the tip of the iceberg. The UN projects that about 60 million people will move out of the desertified areas, the places in Africa, sub-Saharan Africa, that are becoming more desert-like because it's harder to live there. About 60 million people moving out of those regions by 2020, which is a huge number. It doesn't mean that all of them are going to Europe. They could be relocating in other parts of sub-Saharan Africa. But these are very vulnerable populations that need our attention and really forethought. This is just at the cusp, and there are some things that can be done now, like heavy, heavy investments in adolescent girls' education, voluntary family planning, and, of course, planning for migration. So, yeah, migration is a big part of the story.
Now, we have the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. We had the recent Paris climate talks. Do these international bodies take the population angle seriously, or are they afraid to talk about it?
Alex, that's a very good question, and I don't know the answer. There's a great report it's the Climate and Health report from the last series of IPCC reports, and it recognizes reproductive health services, including modern family planning, as having the potential for climate mitigation to reduce carbon emissions. It talks about co-benefits for human health and the climate. So there are some people in these institutions that definitely do recognize it, but oftentimes I read reports that really focus on how rapid population growth is a challenge. There is a recent World Bank report about climate impact amongst poor families in poor parts of the world, and they cited rapid population growth, I think, 10 times as a contributing factor. But then in 70 pages of recommendations, they didn't go on to recommend investment in voluntary family planning. So some people either don't understand the relationship between population and environment, but I think more often they don't recognize that something can be done that upholds women's basic human rights and has positive effects on the environment.
And you've linked to a paper titled Reproduction and the Carbon Legacies of Individuals. It's by Paul Murtaug and Michael Slacks. What does that contribute to this conversation?
Oh, that's a very interesting analysis that looks at, yes, as you say, the carbon legacy, the effects, the carbon effects of each child that a couple has. And I forget exactly how they do their analysis, but of course, each child has his or her own carbon footprint, but then they have the likelihood that they will again have a child. So it's like a multi-generational type analysis to look at the carbon effects. And the takeaway is that having an additional child will have, let me put this positively because it is a positive story, that averting an unintended pregnancy will have greater benefits for reducing greenhouse gases than all of the other things that we can do combined. This is in the case of high-consuming couples. Averting an unintended pregnancy will have greater benefits than buying a Prius and, going solar electricity for the house, et cetera. So I think it's a really good paper. I'm glad you brought that up.
So wrapping this up for our listeners, I'm sure we're all wondering, how do we approach this? How do we talk to other people about this subject? Do you have any ideas for conversation starters?
I think that we don't have to be afraid about making the connections between population and the environment. You can be concerned about the environment and population's effects on it, and at the same time want to uphold women's rights to have a family. Because we have about 40 years of data from around the world showing that when governments prioritize and invest in voluntary family planning, family size falls. That's the conversation opener. We need to get population back on the world agenda.
Do you have any websites, a Facebook page or a Twitter feed that you'd like to pass on to our listeners?
Yes, I would. Please look at our website, oasisinitiative.berkeley.edu. We are looking for partners, and we are also have a Friends of the Sahel Network, which is a button you can click if you would like to join and become one of our friends who's interested in the Sahel region of Africa.
We've been speaking with public health expert Alicia Graves about a solution for climate change where each of us does have some power, and that's giving women the choice on reproduction and producing fewer high-carbon consumers. As always, listeners, you can find those links just mentioned and more in my weekly show blog at ecoshock.info. Alicia, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you, Alex. Have a nice day.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.